Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
I didn't march 1 yard, 1 foot for the same sex to get married, and they're taking wrong and making it right, and taking right, making it wrong.
Those of us who are inspired by Judeo-Christian values, we're not seeking to sit in judgment of anyone. But we know that there are fundamental truths proven through thousands of years of human history.
I've referred to Joel Osteen's theology of the tyranny of positive thinking, where everybody must say positive things and think positive thoughts in order to be blessed by God.
That's the difference between preaching about Christ, where you basically just cut him apart and use him however you see fit, versus preaching Christ.
Pro Football Hall of Fame wives, love Issues, etc.
Scientists make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes in their profession. Scientists will sometimes say something is true, and then later they'll say, well, we've just realized that what we said was true isn't true. And that's happened recently. We talked recently on Issues Etc. about a breakthrough in the Big Bang Theory about inflation, a very early time, at least according to the Big Bang model, an early time in the universe's history when things kind of, well, they inflated. It's a stopgap measure, a theory that is used to explain some conflicting data in the Big Bang theory and observations. Well, recently, a scientific group operating with a piece of equipment called Bicep 2, very sophisticated kind of telescope, came to a conclusion about inflation. They said they'd found the first direct evidence for it, and therefore for the current model of the Big Bang. But now they've had to take it back. There are other explanations that may explain their data. Is part of the problem here scientists simply rushing their research into the headlines? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Monday afternoon, June the 23rd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Danny Faulkner joins us for the first half hour of the program. We're going to talk about some overstated conclusions, at least in the media, about the Big Bang Theory. A little bit later, Pastor Tom Baker joins us. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson, Elijah and the Prophets of Baal, the famous story of Elijah defeating, well, actually God defeating the prophets of Baal. He's outnumbered. They are more enthusiastic. They're more devoted. And yet in the end, the prophets of Baal end up dead. And Elijah, well, he didn't seem too encouraged by the whole story. 1 Kings chapter 18, a little bit later with Pastor Tom Baker on this Monday afternoon. Then Dr. Arthur Just joins us to talk about the Nativity, the events before and during and after the birth of John the Baptist in Luke chapter 1. John the Baptist is remembered on the 24th of June. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Dr. Danny Faulkner is a regular guest. He has a PhD in astronomy from Indiana University, and he is professor of astronomy for Answers in Genesis. Dr. Faulkner, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd. It's good to speak with you again.
When it comes to the Bicep 2 group and their statements, well, it's only been less than 2 months since they made their statements about direct evidence for so-called inflation. We'll explain that in a minute. It's part of the problem here, scientists rushing their research, their data, and their conclusions into the headlines.
Yeah, actually, it was 3 months ago. They had their press conference on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th. And I think you and I talked about this briefly shortly after that, so kind of coming back and revisiting this. I think the problem is a rush to this. I think I said at the time that this question, if about inflation, cosmic inflation, is this big thing in cosmology, and if it were verified, if it were widely accepted that this is real, then these people were the first, probably within a decade, they would receive the Nobel Prize in Physics. It's that big of an issue. And so I think when you have those kind of stakes, there's this tendency or temptation to try to jump in first and stake out a claim, no matter how tenuous it might be, that you got it first, because they generally don't give a Nobel Prize for second place on these things. So I think that was in the minds of these people. They were looking for this glory and immortality, as it were, of all of this. And they kind of overstepped it. You know, they other scientists quickly jumped on this, and many other people, not just people like me, but many other people were saying, this is a bit premature, this is early. You know, the way you're supposed to do this is to submit it for publication. They hadn't. They did put this paper up on the Internet at the time, and it looked like a submission possibly to the Astrophysical Journal, I'm not sure. But I downloaded it then and read through it. And then a few days ago, it finally was published in Physical Review Letters. It's not a journal I generally read, but I sometimes have to go look there. And I printed out the article, and I've spent some time comparing the two, and it's basically the same article, except this one has gone through peer review. Generally, when you submit an article, they send it out to other experts in the field who then look at it. They criticize it. They decide, you know, well, you need to say it this way or need to leave that out or whatever. But going through the second paper or the actual published paper, I can see paragraph by paragraph, it's basically the same paper. But they did change a few things here and there. They changed the title a little bit. They changed in their abstract. They made a less bold statement. And in their conclusion, they made less bold statements than they had before, because they've been really dressed down by other scientists saying, you're premature on this, and besides, you did some of the work wrong, we think.
Okay, what is inflation, and what did the BICEP 2 group observe, and what did they first say it meant, and what are they now saying it means?
Okay. The ruling paradigm for the cosmology, the origin of the universe for the past half century has been the Big Bang model. This is this idea that 13.8 billion years ago, that everything, the space, matter, time, energy, everything suddenly appeared in a very hot state, very dense state. It was expanding, and it continued to expand. And here we are 13.8 billion years later, the universe around us is what we see. And this idea had been proposed 90 years ago, probably, and it really got its big confirmation 50 years ago this year. A couple of astronomers named Penzias and Wilson discovered this background hiss. It's called a cosmic microwave background. It's called microwave because that's part of the spectrum it's in, and the background because it's coming from every direction in space. And this was a prediction that the Big Bang model had made, that the universe should be permeated by this kind of this sort of energy field. And they were the first to discover this back in 1964. And this was hailed as the great proof, as it were, for the Big Bang model. And to this day is still the only evidence, really, for the Big Bang model, though it probably could be interpreted a number of different ways, apart from the Big Bang model. And according to the current ideas of the Big Bang model, you had to have this period of time called inflation, like 10 to the minus 34 seconds after the Big Bang happened. Keep in mind, 10 to the minus 34, that's a decimal point followed by 34 zeros and then maybe a 1 after that. So it's a very, very short period of time. The universe suddenly went through this big hyper-expansion, far, far faster than the speed of light. The universe suddenly got bigger in a big jump all at once. And this was invoked 30 years ago to try to solve a couple of huge problems the Big Bang Theory had, and a few other problems along the way. It was this great rescuing device that they put forth, and it soon gained wide acceptance that inflation must be true, even though, A, nobody knows what caused it. There's no really agreed-upon mechanism that caused it. It just happened. And, B, there was no evidence for it. So that I'm going to ask a question. Is this science? You just make it up because you need it? You don't know why it happened? You have no proof that it happened? You just believe it happened because otherwise we wouldn't be here? And those are really big problems as far as I'm concerned. So they begin building these more sensitive devices to more accurately measure this background radiation. And one of the latest things they've been looking at in the last decade is to try to look at a pattern in the background radiation, what we call a polarization pattern. It's made up of waves, and any wave tends to be waving or vibrating in one direction more than another direction. It's not real strong, but it does happen. If you've ever worn polarizing sunglasses, you're making use of polarized radiation to be able to see better, get rid of the glare. Those are the only kind of sunglasses I'll have, by the way. Well, the background radiation should be polarized in a certain way, but the idea is that inflation should leave an imprint of polarization caused by what we call gravitational waves during that time period. There should be a very subtle signal there in the background radiation. So they've been building these experiments. It was BICEP 1, there's BICEP 2, and they've got other, there are other experiments besides those different acronyms. One's called Polar Bear and a bunch of other names like this. Funny, clever names they come up with. Each one trying to tweak out the signal in a very different way from one another. And ultimately, the problem you have is that many other things can mimic that signature, one of them being dust, the little tiny microscopic particles in the galaxy that can mimic that polarization pattern. And that's been the focus of criticism up to this point, that maybe what they were seeing was polarization pattern due to dust and nothing else. And in fact, their revised abstract, it says, I'll read this one sentence to you. It says, however, these models are not sufficiently constrained by external public data to exclude the possibility of dust emission bright enough to explain the entire excess signal. And the way I would read that is someone who's published in the literature and you know, in the field, not necessarily this field, but astronomy-related things, that has all the hallmarks of people who are convinced they have found this, but they could never get it published past reviewers unless they put some sort of caveat in there. So my suspicion is that the authors and the researchers of this study are still convinced they found cosmic inflation, but they've been forced to add that by all the criticism out there.
Oh, and it's not just criticism. I mean, they are essentially trying to do what a good scientist does, which is be honest and say, by the way, there might be another explanation. There is an equally plausible explanation for what we've observed. Isn't that essentially what they're saying?
Oh, yeah. And in the original paper, it was more bold. And there are other statements in here I found that where they had softened it up quite a bit, saying, "Well, we think we've got it, but it could be this." And that's a more honest way to do it. When I write things, unless I'm absolutely positively certain about something, I put little terms in there to try to couch it, saying that this is what I think and this is what I believe I have, but you need to be careful. And that's all really a hallmark of a good scientist, I think.
Dr. Danny Faulkner is our guest. We'll take a break. We're talking with him on this Monday afternoon, June the 23rd, about some overstated conclusions about the Big Bang Theory and inflation. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc.
Religion or astronomy, it all started with the Big Bang. Music and mythology, Einstein and astrology, it all started with the Big Bang. It all started with the Big Bang.
What are some practical and personal issues facing many single men and women? And how can singles live secure in Christ? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June is Hello, My Name is Single. It's written by regular guest Adrian Dorr-Heinz. Hello, My Name is Single is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about Hello, My Name is Single at issuesetc.org.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
No matter the size, big or small, RP Lumber can deliver it all. From pickups to one-tons to box trucks and booms, everywhere you look, you see blue. RP Blue. RP prides itself in customer service. RP will deliver quality products to your home, business, or job site. And you can be sure of timely delivery on clean trucks with courteous drivers. So when you think of service, think blue. RP Blue. With over 50 local community locations, for 37 years, RP Lumber.
Your church service, sanctuary, and congregation are all unique. So why settle for low-quality recordings when your organist is unavailable? The Substitute Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. Log on to churchmusicsolutions.com and request a free demo kit to allow you and your members to use the Substitute Organist Service without obligation and without a sales pitch. Keep singing with Church Music Solutions.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about some overstated conclusions regarding the Big Bang theory and the theory of inflation. Dr. Danny Faulkner is our guest on this Monday afternoon. Dr. Faulkner, one of the things that I think probably maybe annoys a little, probably annoys you more than it annoys me, about the kind of the general state of science as it, at least in popular terms, attempts to pit itself against a biblical worldview, a creationist worldview, is the unwillingness for scientists to say exactly what these scientists have finally said. And that is, look, we think we're right, but we may be wrong. I often don't hear the latter part of that statement, especially when, it, as I said, kind of in the more popular forums for science, scientists want to take on creationism or intelligent design or some other view of the origins of the universe. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think there's a bit of arrogance, maybe hubris there, that I think we're all perhaps guilty of that at some point. This is not new. Every generation seems to think that they are the first to arrive at ultimate truth in these kinds of matters. And, of course, within a few years, what you believe to be ultimate truth is being eroded away and then replaced by something else. Back at the end of the 19th century, many physicists thought that they were nearing the end of physics. They just had to work out the details. Newton's laws of motion and such, and law of gravity had just been this unparalleled success for more than two centuries. And while people were getting ready to write the end of physics, as it were, there were a number of experiments underway at that point that chipped away at it, and this finally led to what we call quantum mechanics. It's the physics of very small systems, such as subatomic particles and atoms, and also general relativity, which is kind of replaced the general law of gravity. And these two have been very successful theories throughout the 20th and into the 21st century, but there are strong indications that these models are incomplete and that one day will be replaced by something better. And people will take our latest ideas in science and attempt to prove that is the ultimate end statement on everything. And then when you try to diss the Bible by saying, well, it's just a book full of stories and myths, and science has disproved all of those, you're staking your eternal state upon your internal destiny upon a very changing body of beliefs we call science. And that's dangerous for the individual. It's dangerous for society. And I do see a growing hostility in our culture, our society, but also in science, among scientists, I should say, towards biblical Christianity. I think it's being made visible in so many different ways.
So how skeptical should we be of at least this part of the Big Bang Theory that says, by a mechanism we cannot explain, there is literally no explanation for why this should have occurred the way it did. We're trying to explain why the disparate parts of the universe, and we're talking about very disparate parts of the universe, somehow once could communicate information or heat or any whatever it may be between them. The only thing we can come up with is the theory of inflation. We can't explain it. We have no reliable evidence for it, but we're going to believe it anyway. How skeptical should we be about this?
I think you should be very skeptical of it. You know, if the average person really, you know, grasped what was going on here, and if many scientists, you know, finally woke up and realized what's being stated here, they ought to be appalled with it. Again, you know, they're invoking some unknown mechanism that led to this thing with no evidence, but yet it had to happen or we wouldn't be here. And that makes it science. It's the strangest form of science I've ever encountered. And I think people should be very skeptical.
How does it fare in terms of direct evidence? You said the only piece of evidence that we can observe, alleged evidence we can observe for the Big Bang in general, is the microwave background radiation. How do you think that theory fares? Does it remain a cosmological orthodoxy for a time? Is there any rival to it?
At this point, there is no rival. Back when I said half century ago, it became the dominant model. The other model out there, which actually had points in its favor for a few decades, was a steady state or eternal theory. A lot of people were dragged all the way, screaming all the way to abandon that one in the mid-60s, late 60s. And so we've had no other game in town for 50 years. And so no matter how convoluted or how bad the theory may become, people are going to cling to it because what's the alternative? Special creation? You know, God of the Bible? I don't think so in many cases. It kind of reminds me of the Ptolemaic model. This was a model a guy named Claudius Ptolemy put together almost 2,000 years ago now, to explain the motions of the planets. He had to put little gears on gears, we call epicycles, to make this work, and the model worked fantastically. It had the Earth near the center, what I call the old geocentric model. And this model stood for 15 centuries, and its strength was that you could keep changing it, adding more epicycles and more epicycles. By the time you get to 400 years ago, people had as many as 100 epicycles to make this work. But that was its undoing. It became very complicated, and people began to realize, you know, the world's probably simpler than that. And they began casting about for a simpler model, and they found it in the heliocentric theory. But, you know, Big Bang models become this way. Whenever there's a discrepancy with reality, they have to add some new effect. Sometimes it's inflation, sometimes it's dark energy, sometimes it's dark matter. They keep throwing in these different things they just kind of pull out of the air to make the model work. And at some point, you have to sit back and ask yourself, isn't this starting to look a lot like epicycles on the Ptolemaic model?
So How would a creationist account for, or at least attempt to honestly account for, the microwave background radiation, the apparent expansion of the universe, things like that?
Well, the expansion of the universe is not a problem. I like the expansion of the universe, and that's been worked into some creation cosmologies out there. But the expansion doesn't necessarily lead to the Big Bang. But the background radiation on its face would seem to, at least if you'll read all the stuff out there about it. The problem that I see is we as creationists need to come up with a plausible explanation for what it is, and I've looked at several, and I've not been able to come up with one myself, and I don't like any of those. But there are some tantalizing problems out there. There are certain aspects of the background radiation that suggest that it's not cosmic at all, not coming from the far reaches of the universe, but instead is a locally generated thing. If it's not cosmic, if it's not coming from the far reaches of the universe, then it's not proof of the Big Bang. And I find that very interesting. If indeed it's generated close to the Earth or close to the solar system, then it's something entirely different than we've been led to believe. And I think that's the avenue that I want to pursue here.
When we look back over the very short history of cosmology, I mean, cosmology is a formal science that has astronomical data to back it up. How short of a time are we talking about? I mean, you say something like this was proposed 90 years ago. That's not that long ago.
Yeah, cosmology, as we know, it's really a century old, less than a century. It was 1929 when Hubble published on the expansion of the universe. It was 1924, just 5 years before that we even knew other galaxies existed for sure. And that changed everything. Up to that point, people had generally thought that our Milky Way galaxy was it. That was the universe. And overnight, the size of the universe increased by an unbelievable amount. So, yeah, cosmology as we know it really goes back less than a century. It's a very new science. People have had cosmological sort of models forever, but none of them actually are viable until you get to the 20th century.
What's the takeaway lesson, so to speak, from this last 3 months where it was announced with a lot of fanfare, a lot of hopes for, as you said, perhaps a Nobel Prize in physics for this team, with press, that proof for this major explanation for a lack of data in the Big Bang Theory was true. Now, 3 months later, well, we might be wrong. What's the major lesson to be learned?
Oh, boy, there are a lot of lessons we can come away with. But I think, if anything else, it kind of illustrates the fact that that scientists are humans. You know, many times we think that scientists are totally objective. They're motivated by just where the data take them. In reality, they're like anybody else. We have biases. We have our assumptions built in that we're not even aware of many times. And it causes us to be blind to certain effects we should be watching out for. And we can be motivated by the wrong things. We want to push a model or a theory or our pet ideas because we like them, not because the data support that. And so this idea that scientists are this cold, objective machines couldn't be further from the truth.
Dr. Danny Faulkner has a Ph.D. in astronomy from Indiana University, and he's professor of astronomy for Answers in Genesis. You can check out the great creation resources produced by Answers in Genesis. Just go to issuesetc.org and click Listen on Demand. Dr. Faulkner, thanks for being our guest.
Oh, you're very welcome.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time talking with Pastor Tom Baker, teaching a Sunday school lesson on this Monday afternoon, June the 23rd. We'll be in 1 Kings chapter 18, the very familiar, sometimes confusing story of the prophet Elijah and the prophets of Baal. Stay tuned. We talk to the biggest names in religion today, liberal bishop John Shelby Spong.
I don't think Jesus ever preached the Sermon on the Mount, for example. I don't believe anybody ever took 5 loaves and 2 fish and fed 5,000 people. I don't believe that's possible to do.
Liberal Bible critic Bart Ehrman.
There's a difference between what the historical Jesus actually said and what the Gospels say he said. And to understand what the historical Jesus was really like, we have to get behind the Gospels.
Muslim critic of Christianity, Reza Aslan.
By definition, the resurrection is an ahistorical event, and so therefore historians have no right, no business commenting upon it.
Where else on Christian radio will you hear these guests challenged with important questions? Talk radio for the thinking Christian, Issues, etc. Listen live or on demand at issuesetc.org.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway will present the inaugural Village Lutheran Lecture on Christianity and Culture July 19th, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at Village Lutheran Church, Ladue, Missouri. Her topic will be Tales from the Front, Religious Liberty and the Media, July 19th, 9 to 11 a.m. at Village Lutheran Church, 9237 Clayton Road in Ladue, Missouri. We invite you to join us for this free and highly beneficial opportunity.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. Our Savior Lutheran, Westminster, Massachusetts. Redeemer Lutheran, Fairhope, Alabama. St. Matthew Lutheran, Stony Plain, Alberta, Canada. Holy Cross Lutheran, Moline, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Munster, Indiana. St. John Lutheran, Racine, Wisconsin. Calvary Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Reformation Lutheran, Afton, Missouri. Emmanuel Lutheran, Lima, Ohio. Risen Lord Lutheran, Taylorsville, Kentucky, Prince of Peace Lutheran, Crystal Lake, Illinois, and Trinity Lutheran, Elmore, Ohio. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes a congregational sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. Journal, the Issues Etc. 300.